Good afternoon. The time is 2 o'clock. Welcome to Vox Pop for this Thursday, September 3rd. I'm Ray Graff. It's Gardening Today, and we welcome back the crew. Greg Ward from Ward's Nursery, Fred Breglia from the Landis Arboretum, and Dale Isla Riggs from the Berry Patch. If you have a question about what's going on in the lawn or the garden or the shrubbery or the trees, give us a call, 800-348-2551. It usually gets pretty crowded, so call early if you want to get in. 800-348-2551. You can email voxpop@wamc.org. Several people have done that. There's room for more. voxpop@wamc.org or 800-348-2551. Fred, Dale Isla, Greg, your gardening calls coming up on Vox Pop right after the news. Hello again. Welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Ray Graff. Gardeners are back, don't you know? We're ready to take your calls. 800-348-2551 if you want to jump in. Fred Breglia is director of the Landis Arboretum in Esperance, New York. Greg Ward owns Ward's Nursery, a gardening destination in Great Barrington, Massachusetts. And Dale Isla Riggs is the owner and operator of the Berry Patch in Steventown, New York. If you have a question about things that grow in the ground, call us, 800-348-2551, or you can email us at voxpop@wamc.org. So it's voxpop@wamc.org for the email. And the number, you must have this written on your wall by now, 800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551. Hello, gardeners. How are you?
Hello, hello.
We're great.
Yes.
Greg Ward, how are things over at the old nursery?
Excellent. It's, you know, this regular rain we've been getting is just fantastic for gardening because it's not so much that you go, oh, it's so wet out here, I don't want to work in the garden. It dries out every day, and you can pretty much every day, and you can get out there. And it's just really fun to be kind of filling in or certainly tidying up. You know, my vegetable garden, I've got some things that are kind of passing a little bit, and I've been picking them up. I got rid of the peas a couple weeks ago.
Yeah.
But I have some nice delicata squash that have ripened already. I didn't realize they would be ripe so soon.
That
so
is a common thing that's happening this year.
Yeah. And so they're ready to just pick up and clean up that spot.
Nice. I understand you're now a teacher.
And a teacher in what?
I thought you were giving classes.
Oh, no. We are giving classes. Ah. We meaning Ward's Nursery.
All right. But so you're not actually doing it.
Personally, no. But I know my daughter, Eva, will be teaching one of them.
Oh, yeah. What's that?
Bulbs 101.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, so that one's a free class that we're going to be having on September 27th. And I can keep going if
How long is the list?
I got two more, but
all right,
one
go
I want
ahead.
To read. So yeah, on September 27th, it's Bulbs 101, and that is just coming in to listen to and get some pointers on, you know, how to place the bulbs in the ground, or if you want to force them in a container, how to do that. We talk about that often on the show, especially in March when someone has a bag of bulbs that they forgot to plant and they want to know what to do with. Don't wait that long is the first answer.
Okay.
And then on the, on October 25th, which I'll probably mention again later, there's repotting your orchids. We've done this every year. Everyone has an orchid, not everyone, but most people have an orchid, and they go, I don't know what to do with this orchid that bloomed great, and now it's just sitting there. Well, repotting them is really important because you want to have sort of fresh medium, just, you know, so you end up taking them out, bare rooting them, and replanting them in certain medium so that are more conducive to certain genus or species. And that one's on the 15th. There'll probably be a fee for that because it will include some materials. You can sign up for these by going to wardsnursery.com/events, or you can call the 413-528-0166 number and extension 23 to talk to Jody. And can I read the last one?
Well, why not? We have a minute left in the show. Go
you
ahead.
You are so good to me, Ray.
Thank you.
So this one's kind of interesting. It's how native biodiversity relates to infectious disease. We're going to have James Shepard, MD, PhD, Yale School of Medicine.
Neato.
And board member of Homegrown National Park. And he will explore How Human Land Use, Suburban Expansion, Species Invasions, and Habitat Fragmentation Has Reshaped Disease Ecology, Fueling the Rise of Things Like Lyme Disease and Other Zoonoses.
Other
infectious diseases that move from animals to humans.
That's a big word. Did you have that written down? Or you remember that?
It was written here, and then I looked it up.
You know what, Greg, and if people want to find out more, your website is what?
Oh, it's wardsnursery.com, and that one's pretty cool. It's on September 19th.
Okay. Well, that's very interesting indeed. Fred Breglia, what's going on at the Landis Arboretum?
Yep. So we're gearing up for our fall plant sale, and it's going to be September 12th and 13th. And if you're a member, you can also come on the Friday before and kind of pre-shop.
Get all the good stuff.
And, you know, and also comes with complimentary hors d'oeuvres and stuff like that, too. But we're there from 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. and no charge to go to the sale. And then on the Sunday, September 13th, we're doing a first time ever to celebrate our 75th anniversary this year, a community day of sorts. And I'll be giving a tour along with Nick Miller of the Native Plant Trail at around 1:30. The community day is from 12 to 3. We also have George Steele doing a nature workshop on animal tracks, and there'll be some other activities for kids. So come out, no charge for it, and we'd love to see you there.
I mean, the Landis is so cool. I mean, doing that live event we did, I don't know when it was, a few months ago, whatever.
Earth Day, April.
Yeah, that's right, Earth Day. It was great. Yeah. And the odds are I'll never go back. But well, it's in my memory.
It was
I
a lot of fun.
I love
though.
The place. You know, it's so cool.
And we loved having you guys out there. That was a blast.
Dale Isla Riggs, you brought berries and bugs. Explain.
Yes.
Well, first of all, what's going on at the berry patch?
The berry patch is still dealing with mountains of melons,
and now we've
added reams of raspberries to that as well. And I will say that the two of them mixed together make a really amazing fruit salad.
Yeah.
So we're just trucking along, trying to get everything harvested, and wishing that our college kids were not back at school.
Oh.
But we're moving along with harvesting whatever we can, and we'll be at the Troy Market on Saturday. And at the farm store, people can go to our website, theberrypatch.net, and place orders, because we don't have the people or energy to be in two places at the same time anymore.
And you have to save your energy for the skiing season. I mean,
let's face it. That's absolutely right.
So you brought a jar. I thought it had apricot jam in it, but apparently it has a terrible, terrible invasive pest.
So the jar is just one tablespoon of salt to one cup of water.
Right.
And to make a nice salt solution. And in the past, I've talked about spotted wing Drosophila and how it's a really difficult pest for both home gardeners and commercial growers to deal with. And their favorite food is raspberries.
No kidding.
Our raspberries, we grow in a high tunnel with insect exclusion netting all along the sides and ends, so that we're able to grow our raspberries pesticide free. But people that have raspberries outside, if they're not spraying them on a regular basis or put exclusion netting over them, probably have some spotted wing Drosophila in them right now. And a really easy way to test for it, because people say, I've never seen that, I don't have it. So I just brought in some salt solution, and I found a couple wild raspberries growing out along our hedgerow that I picked.
Again, not in your establishment, but outside and wild and not being protected.
Exactly. And they felt a little soft on the bottom. When I took them off, you could see some red raspberry juice on the receptacle.
Yeah.
So I'm just going to stick them in this salt water.
Okay.
And we'll just wait a couple minutes, maybe answer a few questions
or
whatever you want to do. But when you open them up, you can actually see some juice at the bottom and kind of looks like kind of jello-y and such. So you just stick them in the salt water a couple minutes, and we're going to see what we find floating to the surface.
So you're drowning them in salt water.
Yes.
Uh-huh.
They do not like salt water. Just like if we went into a high concentration of salt water, we probably wouldn't be real thrilled with it either. So we just kind of mush them in there, and within a couple minutes.
Okay, this will be fun. We'll see the corpses float to the surface.
Exactly.
And these guys are bad because
they're bad because the raspberries, any fruit they infest, does not last very long. They get soft And if you leave them on your counter, you don't put them in your fridge right away, you'll come out the next morning and it will look like you've got raspberry jam with little white crawly things on it.
Yeah, okay. Well, let's go to the email here. The email address is voxpop@wamc.org. And the number is 800-348-2551. Gardening Today with Dale Isla Riggs from the Berry Patch, Greg Ward from Ward's Nursery, and Fred Breglia from the Landis Arboretum. This question is about raspberries. Dorothy writes in, our current raspberry patch in Troy has fewer and fewer raspberries each year. We're looking to plant a new patch about 50 feet away in a raised bed with new soil. Any recommendations on what to plant?
So there's lots of options out there. Part of what you need to decide if you want to have a summer variety of raspberries or if you want fall bearing, also some people call them everbearing, which will produce a crop in the summer and in the fall if you want. Some of the newer varieties of the everbearing or fall raspberries are Crimson Treasure is a really nice one that was released by Cornell. We actually have a sample of that here today. Fred's pointing at a little crawly thing.
We got one swimming.
That's exciting.
There's, if you want summer-bearing raspberries, I would suggest two or three varieties of summer-bearing raspberries and two or three varieties of fall-bearing raspberries.
Okay.
And that way you can have raspberries basically from July through the month of October.
Way to extend the growing season.
Yeah.
For sure.
Yeah.
Especially with raspberries.
Yep. And especially with raspberries, since you will want to protect them because of spotted wing Drosophila, it kind of helps spread out the, makes a better reason to have a structure over them. And the local nurseries have a wide variety. Just go from early season to late season.
Okay. One more email here before the break. And then, of course, we'll cover a lot more email and phones. 800-348-2551. It's Gardening with Fred Breglia, Dale Isla Riggs, and Greg Ward. Bob is out today. Don't worry about Bob. He'll be okay. We'll see him next time. This is from Joan, who says, good to hear Bob back on the program. All right, Joan. First time in 25 years we've had a problem with moles. They're destroying our gardens with their tunneling, says Joan. Any thought why we're suddenly having this problem and any suggestions to avoid them in the future? I purchased two traps today. All right, that's from Joan.
So I do wonder if it's voles again, you know, with the old conversation that we've had, voles and moles, because voles are the ones that you generally see in the garden. The moles are really going to be more in the lawn.
Yeah, moles are usually active where you're not active. So we often see them in the spring any places that you don't spend a lot of time. If you're, you know, on your lawn all the time, they're not going to be there. And the garden is a pretty active place, so that's usually not a place you would see a mole. But voles are not only tunneling, which usually isn't what you notice first. What you notice first is that your plants are eaten.
Yep, that's generally it. And the moles, generally, you don't see the actual holes. You actually see more mounds of soil.
Uh-huh.
And with the vole, you definitely got a hole. And like you said, generally declining plants as a result somewhere nearby.
But the moles are okay for you, right?
The moles aren't. They don't hurt the garden. You know, they generally eat grubs. They eat, you know, earthworms. And,
yeah, their biggest
know, we don't really
issue
mess with
is,
the moles.
Is the lawn. Is people want to have this nice, you know, non-soft lawn. And moles, especially in the springtime, can be digging up your lawn a
right.
bit. So you step on it and it sinks down and you go, oh, I got to fix that. So that's the extent of mole damage usually.
Okay.
Yeah, with moles, I think she mentioned about the tunnels. So the tunnels can go partway into the ground. If she has any like weed mat or anything like that, the voles will usually make a tunnel underneath it, but you will actually physically see where their runway is
through
those tunnels.
Yep.
All right, now listen, we're overdue by a couple of minutes on a break here. We'll take a quick break and then we're going to jump to the phones. 800-348-2551. That's the number. It's Gardening Today. A little marquees for you now. That's some groovy stuff there from the Marquees here on Vox Pop. 800-348-2551. Ray Graff with you. It's Gardening Today. Dale Isla Riggs, Greg Ward, Fred Breglia are here. And let's jump to the phones. Joanne is in Queensbury. Hello, Joanne.
Yes, this is Joanne.
Okay. Good for you.
Tell me what's going on with the tomatoes that have a black spot on the bottom of the tomato.
Okay.
That sounds like blossom end rot to me. And that is basically caused by uneven watering. It's considered to be a calcium deficiency, but it's not because there isn't enough calcium in the soil or in the plant. It's a problem with the calcium getting to the fruit in the quantities that are needed because they get too dry and then they get maybe a little too wet and then a little bit too dry and then maybe a bit too wet. So it's all about keeping uniform moisture of your tomatoes throughout the season.
Yep. Tomatoes really like uniform watering. I know that. If you kind of go spotty with them or let nature take its course, a lot of times you end up with that in the garden. So easy one to fix.
All right, John. Yeah? You're satisfied? You want more? Joanne. Okay. Well, there you are. Thank you, Joanne. We appreciate it. Maybe she was listening on the radio. Could be. Here's another question about tomatoes from Kathy. We have many varieties of tomatoes growing, from heirloom brandywine to patio cherry, plum, etc. We pick some when starting to color and let them ripen indoors and let others ripen on the vine. They've all been pretty tasteless, even when very ripe. It's been pretty wet here in Schenectady County since the spring. Is there anything we could have done to enhance the flavor? And that's from Kathy.
So one thing that commercial growers will do is we know that potassium is related to flavor in fruits and vegetables, especially in tomatoes. So a lot of commercial growers will give their tomatoes a bit higher potassium fertilizer when they're getting to the stage where the fruit are going to be ripening. Mm-hmm. The last, say, 3 weeks or so. So once you see those tomatoes get to their full size, but they're fully green,
yeah,
start using a higher potassium fertilizer, and that will often help with the flavor.
So you almost could still do that if you have a lot of green tomatoes.
Yeah, absolutely. Oh. Yep, for ones that are going to ripen
it's
later
not
in the season.
Quite too late.
No, right. We almost still have quite a few green tomatoes in our plants right now. In fact, they're normally, actually, we're ahead of schedule normally, but this year we seem to be a tad bit behind in terms of the ripening of tomatoes, probably related to the moisture, I'm assuming.
Actually, it's related to the heat that we had earlier.
Oh, that really hot weather.
And tomatoes actually do not like excess temperatures.
Don't they grow a lot of them in California where it's very hot?
But at the season when it's not so hot.
Ah, I see.
Mine came in late, but then like ripened all at once. I'm overwhelmed with tomatoes right now. But I don't see much left. Like in about 10 days, I will have no tomatoes.
You ever make tomato sauce?
I have.
Sauce? Yeah?
Yes.
Yeah, you get rid of the seeds, right?
Why?
Really? I tried making tomato sauce once in my life about 30 years ago, and I didn't do a very good job with the seeds, and it was horrible.
Oh, no.
But, of course, I put Coca-Cola in it.
Oh, that would do it, too.
But that's supposed to temper the acid.
No, I mean,
that's
supposed to temper the acidity, though.
Yeah, it didn't work.
A little piece of potato will also do that. That might also work, exactly. That six-pack.
I don't mind a few seeds. The seeds really don't seem to bother me. You know, then once you put the garlic in, you put the peppers in.
Yeah. Let's go back to our phone lines here, and we'll talk about some other things you can eat. Jim in Steventown has an eggplant issue. Jim, go ahead.
Hi, good afternoon.
Hi.
Can you tell me anything about boreholes that I'm getting in my eggplant? They're about half an inch round and half an inch deep.
Yeah, that could be some corn earworm, it will attack many different types of vegetable crops, including tomatoes and eggplant and potatoes and such. So I suspect that, especially right now, there's a really heavy flight of corn earworm in upstate New York. It tends to come in starting early August or so, and the sweet corn growers have been having to spray for it for several weeks now on a pretty tight schedule, a couple times a week. And so if they're not finding enough corn to go after, they will go after other vegetable crops. And eggplant and tomatoes are some of their favorites.
So that's the same when I shuck a corn and I see that worm kind of in there eating. We're talking about that same insect that's now on the eggplant?
Yeah, one of the corn insects. There's three corn insects, but the corn earworm is the one that you will find at the very tip
of the ear. That's what I was talking about. Yeah, you pull it down right away. You're like, whoa, look at that.
Yep.
So if they don't have enough corn, he goes after other things,
exactly,
including eggplant. Wow.
All right. Jim.
All right. Thank you.
Thanks a lot for the call. How are we doing with the little bugs that are dying in the salt water?
So far I've found six little squirmy ones
coming out
around.
Of the raspberries that were not from the berry patch. These are, what are they, spotted what, Nerva?
Spotted winged Drosophila, or okay. I think spotted winged fruit fly.
Uh-huh.
So just like the fruit flies that fly around your overripe bananas in your house, it's a fruit fly like that. But these will actually lay their eggs in the raspberries and other berry fruits just as they barely start to ripen.
What if you eat one by mistake? You're going to die?
I am sure that I have probably eaten thousands okay. of them in my career.
All right, fair enough. And you're alive.
I'm alive.
Good for you.
So, and kicking.
So the solutions are to net them with some kind of barrier or eat them fast.
Or eat them fast, or you can spray them.
Or you can spray.
But the main thing is, you know, if you don't want to put a net up and you don't want to spray them, pick them every day and put them into your refrigerator right away, because if it's down between 32 and 34 degrees, they will die in the fruit.
Uh-huh.
And it will also slow down their development.
Uh-huh. Okay. Well, the number here is 800-348-2551. Dale Isla Riggs from the Berry Patch, Greg Ward from Ward's Nursery, and Fred Breglia from the Landis Arboretum on today's edition of The Gardening Show. I had a Polana raspberry while you were answering that question. Very nice.
They are very nice.
You fellas want to try them too?
I would love to.
I would
All
love
right.
to.
And these are, they're really tasty. You get that tartness out of a raspberry. It's nice, you know? All right, so let's go to the phones once again while you guys are chowing on the first brand, the first variety of raspberry. Frank is in Great Barrington. Hello, Frank.
Hey, how we doing? Good, good.
Good, good.
What is the difference? This is kind of a strange question. What is the difference between moss and mold?
Moss and mold.
They're two different.
Is there a difference?
So moss is a little plant that produces chlorophyll that you see on, you know, on rocks often or on shallow soil. We often talk about it in poorly drained soil in your yard. Usually shady places will grow moss. But mold is a type of fungus. And it's, you know, there's probably several hundred species of moss. I have no idea, but there's probably thousands of species of mold.
Right, because you can have good mold like blue cheese. Blue cheese is good mold.
Exactly,
right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
Well, that's just a quick one. That's it for now. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Appreciate the call. All right, so I had a Polana, very tart. And then while you were talking to Frank, I tried an Autumn Britain. Is that
Autumn it? Britain. Mm-hmm.
I like this one. It's got some sweetness to it.
It does have some sweetness to it. It's an older variety. It's been around for quite a while. It's not used so much commercially anymore because it's actually too dark when it's ripe.
You're kidding.
Nope. Because the industry has moved in a direction where people in the supermarket want to see a light-colored raspberry. And if they see a dark-colored raspberry, they assume that it's overripe isn't going to last very long. But some of the older varieties, that's just how they are. They're really dark, but they also have really good flavor.
You're right. Looking at it in the light here, it definitely is dark. But, you know, to me, this reminds me of the raspberries I saw when I was a kid. I think that
it's
perfect dark red color. Yep. The other ones kind of look like strawberries a little bit.
Exactly. Color-wise, they
do. Yep, and I'd agree. Definitely people, I think, in general, probably because when you go to the supermarket and you do see them darker, they actually are passed in a lot of cases it's not necessarily the older variety fruit. So,
yes.
Well, you guys should try the Autumn.
So it makes sense. But people are missing out when they don't get the some of those old varieties.
And especially for making jam, the color or raspberry sauce, the color of some of these older varieties being really dark is really wonderful.
All right, let's go back to one raspberry question here that came in via email, and then we'll go back to the phones. Jan writes, I had raspberries, but now I don't have any. All my plants moved to my neighbor's yard. A few years ago, a friend gave me some of her raspberries to plant. I found out later that they were the summer raspberries. Would this cause the everberries to go to my neighbor's yard? And that's from Jan.
Well, certainly raspberries do put out roots that will then sprout several feet away from the original planting. And I suspect that maybe her original planting wound up with some virus disease that maybe they just aren't very productive anymore and died out. Whereas the newer sprouts that went to her neighbor's yard have just come up through, have traveled through the soil and are now in her neighbor's yard. You could certainly replant any of the fall bearing varieties, and they should do just okay. fine.
And what's our body count now on the spotted, whatever they are?
The spotted winged Drosophila. Yeah. I haven't looked closely, but I think we're up to 8.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah. Out of 3 raspberries, I will say.
Incredible. All right. Let's go now to, oh boy, this is adventure in radio time. It's Abigail in Kingston. Hello, Abigail.
Buenos dias. Anyway, yes, absolutely wonderful show. I just can't get enough of you guys. You are absolutely terrific. What do you think about watering a garden with leftover peels and all kinds of organic stuff, potato peels, and that's what I do. It seems to work very well.
Oops. We lost you there, Abigail. Are you still there? Like Abigail's phone went dead. But we know what Abigail's talking about, so go ahead.
So compost teas, I mean, have been around for a long time. They work really well. Manure teas, compost teas, they definitely work. You get old rotted compost, you mix it with some water, and you can water in your garden. I always say check the pHs of compost before you deal with that, because pH is a huge player in plant health care and how well your plants grow. But I know she had mentioned raw, it sounded like raw peels, not composted. Wish it was still on the air. But, that it sounds like it's working, but in general, I always have pushed towards, and my dad before me pushed towards using decayed material, really good compost, and then making, it's basically like a soluble way to put fertilizer to your plants.
Yeah,
it works well.
That traditionally, it's always you compost everything first, then you make a tea, you saturate it with water, you let the water stand around, you screen it off, and then you use that. But the fresh scraps, could also work, I would think, because they're releasing some nutrients as well.
Yep, I would think they would. I think you would probably get better results if you composted it and then watered it.
The number here is 800-348-2551. If you have a gardening question for Dale Isla Riggs, Greg Ward, and Fred Breglia, 800-348-2551. Email is voxpop@wamc.org. Okay, I just had a Crimson Treasure, my favorite of the three thus far.
Yeah, so Crimson Treasure is kind of neat because the small fruit breeder at Cornell Agritech in Geneva is the one that developed it, and I was one of them that tested it when it was still a number and just a numbered selection.
Did you test it on this show?
I think I've brought it here before.
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah. But, testing it for commercial traits as far as growing it in our greenhouse. And I called up Courtney one day and said, we got to talk about this raspberry that you had me test, and you need to name this as a variety.
It's really, really good. Nice. It's a good one. Delightful and great texture. Yeah. Just the whole thing is a good package. The number here is 800-348-2551. Let's go over to Norfolk, Connecticut, and Rita. Hello, Rita. You're on.
Hello.
Hello. You're on the air.
Hi, this is Rita Friedman, and I have a question about our tomato plant.
Okay.
We, every year, buy a cherry tomato plant. It's called Sun Gold, and we've been very successful with it. And there's just my husband and myself, and it's a bounty of delicious tomatoes for all of summer. This year, I only did one thing differently. I bought a beautiful tomato hoop or cage, and I went, oh, this is great, It required very little, training of the vine. And it just looked spectacular. Lots of yellow flowers, lots of green tomatoes. Every time the tomato looked like it was about to turn ripe, the next day it's gone with like little bits of the ends of the flowers bitten off. Nothing broken, just taken.
Have you asked the neighbors at all?
We have no... Could be. If there were anyone around us, I would go after them.
What do you think, Kyle?
I would lead toward birds if there's nothing broken, possibly chipmunks.
Okay. Chipmunks?
Well, we gave them a perfect perch with that tomato cage.
I thought maybe chipmunks myself. But
certainly squirrels, but they have if they're
and we have,
able
no, we
to...
have oodles of chipmunks, but they've never gone after it before. But perhaps that glorious... fancy tomato cage I bought gives them all a nice
darn
place
it.
To stand.
It might give them the room they need to get up.
Yeah, they're able to climb it. And the other thing is, those chipmunks know really good food when they find it. And Sun Golds are so sweet and so delicious. They probably got one and tried it and said, oh, I know where I'm coming for dessert every day.
you could, if you wanted to, put a trail cam. I mean, you'd know what you got for sure. There would be no more doubt.
Yep,
it's kind of fun to see. They're cheap.
And then what? How do I save my stunt goldfish?
Yeah, that's a
great
question.
You would at least know what you're dealing with. Yeah. Are we dealing with birds?
What's up against?
Some kind of barrier. If you're pretty sure it is chipmunks, I'm trying to think of a nice, easy barrier that you could put up. Maybe some hardware cloth wire or fencing that you would sort of go around.
So they can climb the hardware cloth.
Well,
you
just create some kind of overhang with it. I still don't have it quite in my head. With something to stop them.
With some of the plants at the Arboretum that are young, like if we put out some young, hydrangea and animals want to get right on there. And for whatever reason, this year and last year too, young hackberry that we plant, if we don't cage them, they just eat those leaves up like you wouldn't believe. So what we've done is very much similar to what you said. It's a hardware cloth. You buy it in a roll, so you can buy it like 3 foot tall, 4 foot tall if your plants are that big, and then you make a roll around it. We dig it in maybe like 2 or 3 inches just into the ground around it, and then we make a top for it as well out of that hardware cloth.
But,
and it's 100%. I mean, there's nothing going through. We have had zero, unless, there's something wrong with the cage, zero.
But Fred, Rita will rip her hands to shreds on that stuff. How do you get to the tomatoes after that?
No, I've used it before.
Okay.
I've got the right, shears or whatever you call it, the metal cutters.
Yep, okay. Use the metal cutters.
Heavy duty gloves.
And you use gloves. So she has definitely worked with that before, no doubt.
I mean, when I tried to put it in my shed to keep the squirrels out of the top,
you get your hands. You need gloves.
It looked like the St. Valentine's Day Massacre inside my shed. There was a lot of blood.
The other thing that you could do is just use some insect exclusion netting and basically make some insect exclusion netting.
And make a frame for it.
And basically make a big bag that you're setting down over the cage, and then you just anchor it at the bottom so the chipmunks can't get out.
That was coming to me.
It's easier for me to do.
It would. So there's this stuff that you can get that is usually white, and floating row cover is the material often referred to as a
floating row cover.
There is an old brand name. It's not called that anymore.
Okay.
Called Remay. So you could ask for Remay, that's the same kind of thing, or means the same thing. And then wrap that tomato cage and tomato in it. Make a, like Dale said, a big sock.
Yeah. Okay. The other thing.
We live by wards in Great Barrington, and I have no doubt they'll have that.
They might. I don't know.
This is not a commercial here. Hold it.
It's fine.
Rita, I was only kidding.
The one thing about row cover versus the insect exclusion netting, there's better airflow through it compared to row cover. So you'd have less disease issues if it's the insect exclusion netting, because there is more airflow.
All right, Rita, we're going to have to let you go. We're overdue for a break. It's The Gardening Show with Fred Breglia, Dale Isla Riggs, and Greg Ward. 800-348-2551 is the number. We'll be back. We'll check the email bag. It's a wonderful world. There's John Pizzarelli here on Vox Pop. 800-348-2551 is our telephone number. It's gardening today, and the email address is voxpop@wamc.org. Let's do a few emails, and then we'll go back to the phones. This one is from Fred. Cottage garden suggestions. I'd like to put in a perennial garden with plants that are not overly plagued by fungal diseases. The garden will receive full sun from mid-morning through sunset. Soil is well amended. I have saved seeds from my purple coneflowers and several varieties of Heliopsis I have everywhere on my property. The Heliopsis vary between 18 inches and 30 inches in height. Do you have a suggestion on other perennials that would do well there? And two, is there a variety of Rudbeckia other than Goldstrom that would work?
There's a lot of new varieties of Rudbeckia that are really hot right now.
Yeah, there are several nice short ones. There's a later one called Fulgida that is a smaller flower, and it starts to bloom now.
Mm-hmm.
So the Goldstroms are really August and are in full bloom at the moment, but the Fulgidas will bloom through September, so that's a really fun one.
Yep.
There's a really tall one, if you have, if you're looking for some height, Lanceonata or Herbstone is, I think, often the selection. And they'll be like 7 feet tall, and they're in full bloom right now too, and would continue. And there's several others that are very compact, similar to Goldstrom, but very compact. Goldstrom is getting some leaf blight.
It is getting issues. A little bit of issues. It's
often about air circulation, yeah, as usual, and this year has been humid. So you know, at this time of year, the molds, the leaf spots are kind of common on a lot of things, and the ways to not have that happen or to have it happen less are preventative. There are things that you should be doing in possibly June or July. So with Goldstrom, just even cutting it back, if you're getting that kind of problem all the time, in mid-July before it blooms, it will then regrow and bloom a little later, and that can often keep them a lot cleaner.
There's some really good varieties of Echinacea too right now, a lot of different colors of the coneflower. Yeah. It's like, you know, you see the classic purple, but there's some really nice white ones out there that are really neat.
Cheyenne Spirit is a mix of these really cool kind of pastel colors. There's some new Coreopsis that are really nice that will bloom earlier in the spring, but also kind of be putting out some flowers now. And one of my favorites, they're just starting to bloom now for late color, is hardy hibiscus. And we have some hibiscus at our house that are just starting to bloom now. They're these giant 4 to 7 inch flowers.
Cool. We have some at the Arb too. There's like a really big red one that we've got. I think it's like, I want to say Royal Ruby, but that cultivar might be off. But it's an incredible flower. And they bloom for such a long period of time.
Beautiful.
And
yeah.
It's hard to believe they actually are hardy to this zone.
Yeah.
And they keep coming back.
All those ones you see, they have, there is a local or a Northeast native one or an East Coast native one, Mustakish, I think it's called. I can't remember how to say it exactly, but it's typically pink or red.
Huh.
And then now a lot of these varieties are some version of that with white as well.
Yep.
All the asters are coming into bloom now. Certainly, you know, some people are planting goldenrods now. That's a really nice native late blooming
plant. And there's more cultivars of those goldenrods coming out now, too. If you want a real tall one, ironweed, New York ironweed's is awesome.
Beautiful.
Great pollinator plant. It gets tall. It looks like an aster on steroids. It's an incredible perennial. We got those at the Arboretum. We love them. We sell them at the fall plant sale and stuff as well.
Bee-bomb's no great
cottage,
summer.
No
great
cottage summer garden bloom. Complete without bee-bomb.
Our bee-bomb's already done, though.
Yeah. There's one called Verona castrum, which is a really spiky plant. It's a native plant that has usually white, but there are some selections that kind of are a lavender pink, very soft, tall again, but, you know, not as tall as ironweed, but like, you know, three to four, maybe occasionally five.
Yeah, and when you do design those kind of cottage gardens, if you're starting from a scratch, you know, from a blank slate, it's nice to just kind of set down, draw that garden to scale on a piece of graph paper, and then put where you want tall things, where you want short things, and you can kind of put those little bubbles or blocks around, and you'll know how many plants it'll basically fit. Look up at the requirements of the size of these plants, and then you can draw them right to scale, and you'll know exactly how many plants to buy and where to plant them after you do so.
Oh, and I got one more. There's Allium neriums or Allium, all sorts of summer blooming alliums that are just don't stop. They've been showing color since mid-August, and they are going to continue into September. Millennium is one. Summer Beauty is another. There's several varieties now with varying heights, usually nothing taller than 24 inches. Some shorter, really perfect for the front of the border.
And we didn't mention globe thistle either, but you know, that's another cool one. They have some cool varieties of that. I mean, this is a loaded question, right?
Sure is. Took up almost the entire show. Kate writes, dead leaves on Norway maples. I'm wondering why the leaves on the Norway maples turned brown in July and recently began to fall to the ground. It's as if they were experiencing a severe drought. However, no other trees are similarly affected. I know that Norway maples are invasive. I always thought they were hardy. I've lived in the same area of northern Lake George for decades. It's common for the trees to hold on to their leaves even after the first snowfall in November. Any thoughts?
Yeah, I'm seeing it all around. It's basically normally Norway maple, and she's right. You'll see like nice yellow foliage and, you know, and stuff in the fall. I'm not a fan of Norway maple. Again, it is an invasive, but you got them, you lived with them.
Right.
So normally you see these black spots. They're about maybe the size of a nickel. And they're called tar spot. They look like black tar on a leaf. And what happens in a year like this year with that humidity, moisture, perfect storm weather, is that that tar spot is running rampant. And it literally is making the leaves turn brown. I mean, in our neighborhood, virtually every Norway maple is brown. You're not going to expect too much of a good fall color on it. The good news about this is that it's not going to kill your plant. It's 100% coming back, and it will take this kind of condition for you to see that again. Normally, not as bad as this year. This year, it's perfect storm, perfect conditions, and boy, it's 100%.
Yep.
It's Norway, and it's everywhere.
Right. Well, while we're on the Norway maple questions, let's go to Richard and Rensselaer. And by the way, I had Crimson Beauty just now, that raspberry. I like the Crimson Treasure much better. The Crimson Beauty has a very unique taste.
Yeah, the Crimson Beauty is a new variety. It just got named last year. These are just a tad underripe that I brought in today, so that might affect it some.
Okay.
But it's another nice raspberry, light in color, good for shipping, good for local.
I think Greg wants one, so while we go to the phones here.
Yeah, I had some, but I'll have some more.
Oh, you don't be a glutton now. Richard and Rensselaer, you're on.
Yeah, I just want to say I haven't noticed any of the black spots on the ones that turn brown and yellow.
Yet, if you look at those, you probably will see some evidence of the black, but it's so bad this year that you're not even really able to see too much of that classic black spot. It's, it looks like basically brown leaves that got dried right out and deformed. But it is a fungus, and you're going to have plants that come back looking perfectly fine. This is not a fungus that, there are a lot of fungi that hurts plants, and this one's kind of benign. It just makes them look kind of bad. But if you think of it, this time of year, they're losing leaves. Anyways, plants are shutting down. So fungal problems on leaves this time of year, same as like apple scab. If you went to the Arboretum's crab apple collection, a lot of the older varieties, they don't have any leaves on them at all.
Yeah.
And it's all apple scab. Just the
foliage. It's funny, our crab apple tree has leaves this year.
Yeah, and they're more resistant.
Yeah.
So some varieties are more resistant to the diseases than others. So the ones that are the old varieties don't have a high level of resistance. They're bare. Are they going to come back next year perfectly fine? They sure are. And then you find others that, man, they look really good. And those are resistant varieties. And we do talk about planting resistant varieties. And that's, generally the reason why.
It's Gardening Today with Fred Breglia, Greg Ward, and Dale Isla Riggs. And let's go to Northampton and Craig. Craig, you're on.
Hey, thank you. So I have a 4 Lobelia cardinalis plants in the back, and I didn't realize this was a native New England plant. It is stunning. But
indeed,
I thought it needed a lot of sun as well as wet roots. So I've been watering it every day, and I don't get sun on my garden till after 12:30. So you can imagine half of my garden is like in shade. But this stuff grew not to 2 or 3 feet, but 4 to 6 feet.
Yep.
And I want to bury as many as I can for next year in the garden because it is absolutely gorgeous.
Well,
I'm trying to grow as few cultivars as possible. And I wonder, can you actually grab the seed and winter sow it or fall sow it on the ground? Or what's the best way to reproduce this stuff?
Yeah.
It is gorgeous.
I mean, the first thing is that for exposure, what you're giving it is correct. Not all day hot sun.
It likes that part sun, part shade.
For sure. I mean, when you find them in the wild, they're often in somewhat dappled shade.
Yep.
Often near water, not in water, but near it.
Yep.
And so, yeah, you can.
Yeah, they call them trout lily too. I mean, when I was fly fishing, they used to call it trout lily.
There is a separate thing called trout lily, but. But anyway, yes, so you can definitely collect that seed. Probably need some kind of stratification, which would mean might be easiest to collect the seed in another few weeks when those seed heads are dry, and then make a little nursery, make a little bed in the garden that is convenient to you. Turn over the soil, work it up, and then seed those all those seeds in there. And then in the spring, probably not till June, you should get some little seedlings emerging, and then you can transplant them, move them around.
So hang on. Take my garden outside, take a 2x3 or 2x4 area.
Exactly.
Cultivate it, sprinkle the seeds on it, and put like a glass or plastic over it?
Just a little more soil over the seed, just a light application of soil. I wouldn't go too deep. Just a half an inch or so, like you're putting carrots in the ground.
Yeah, you're basically planting. You're creating a little tiny micro nursery, in a short-term goal of getting your cardinal flowers to sprout, in which case you're going to have a bunch of babies and you can move them anywhere you want.
That's beautiful.
Yep.
That is great.
The most important thing
in the heart fall.
Don't forget you did it there.
Don't forget. That's right.
Mark it off. Maybe even put a tag with a name on it. Say, oh, yeah, I did that last year.
All right, well, thank you for the call. Remember, we were talking about the sun gold tomatoes and the possible chipmunks. Beth and Hurley writes in, the caller with the disappearing sun gold tomatoes could also try two shiny foil balloons. Hmm. Once inflated, tie them about a foot off the ground on the tomato cage. The reflection and movement will scare both chipmunks and birds. They even work once they start to deflate. Just be sure the balloons are tied tightly and dispose of them properly at the end of the season. Balloons should never be released.
That's correct. Yeah, and that would actually have some effect like a scarecrow. And I got a shout out to my wife for this one. This is a good one. We have these two Halloween skulls with a little motion detector. And boy, oh boy, you put that motion detector near your plants with those little Halloween skulls, and anything that goes near it, it goes, it makes a really great scare.
Scares,
oh, it'll really? Scare the, it'll scare people who come in through it.
I mean, your wife seems very nice. She doesn't brilliant. Seem like Morticia Adams, but I mean, that's going into a strange.
Shout out there, Aaron.
All right,
great
fair
job.
Enough. Good job. Fran writes in, I have several butterfly bushes. Should I be cutting off the spent flowers?
Those plants are finishing their major bloom. But if you cut them back, if you sort of like we talk about with the ever-blooming roses, if you reduce them now, they may need a few more nutrients. They can grow and flower again. If that's not something you're worried about and you're just looking for aesthetics, you can definitely just trim the flower heads off.
All right. Let's see here. We'll grab another email here. This is from Diana in Roxbury. Did I do this one? I don't think so. I have a hanging plant that has aphids. I went to a gardening store for a spray to get rid of them. That wouldn't harm other creatures. They gave me neem oil and said to mix it with water and spray on the plant. I did that once, then read that neem is toxic to bees. What else can I use that will take care of the aphids?
Insecticidal soap is a really easy one. You could either buy that product or you could use any kind of like mild detergent type. No scented soaps and mix it with water and it suffocates them. It acts kind of like a neem oil and that way. And it's, I would imagine, significantly less toxic than probably neem, which is not that.
I think, she said hanging plant. And so I assume maybe this is a flowering hanging plant and it's outside, in which case, you may have some pollinators coming to it, which could be an issue. But if it's not any of those things, it doesn't have flowers, it's a plant that you, then I don't see how the neem oil would affect the pollinators. It is an oil, so you can use insecticidal soap, neem oil, horticultural oil. All those things are great for killing aphids. And if you apply them and maybe move the plant into your garage for a day or so that the product dries before you put it back out, you shouldn't hurt any pollinators.
Yeah, that's a good idea.
The other thing you can do is you can actually buy lacewing eggs or lacewing larvae and put them on the plant, and it's a form of biological control, and the lacewing larvae will eat the aphids.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, that's really cool.
We release lacewing larvae in our greenhouses all the time.
By the way, what's our body count there?
The body count is up to 10. And it's at least three different stages or instars of insects, different sizes. And if there's 10 that I can see, there's probably three or four that are either eggs or the very first hatchlings that I can't see without a hand lens or microscope.
Well, this was a great experiment. Thank you for doing that.
Certainly.
I loved it. And thanks for the raspberries there, Dale Isla Riggs. How do people find out more about the Berry Patch?
They can go to our website, theberrypatch.net, or come see us at the Troy Market every Saturday from 9 to 2.
When do you wrap it up in the season?
We do the Troy Market usually into about the middle of November.
Okay, so you'll be going a while.
Yep.
And then you're off.
Yes.
And then we may not see you on the show for a while, but that's okay. Greg Ward, Ward's Nursery is a fabulous place. Tell us how we can find out more.
Yeah, we're in Great Barrington, Massachusetts, 600 South Main Street, or wardsnursery.com.
And Fred Breglia, the Landis Arboretum, where the plant sale is going to happen soon. Yep. How do they find out about that?
It's our landisarboretum.org, and we're at 174 at Lape Road in Esperance, New York.
All right. Well, listen, thank you all for being here. And thanks to everybody who called in and emailed. There are so many emails here that we didn't get to. And you know what? In the warm weather months and even into the cool weather months, we do this show twice a month for a reason. So this gang will be back 2 weeks from today. Thank you for listening. Support comes from Troy Waterfront Farmers Market, featuring Summer's Bounty, with over 100 fresh local food and produce vendors, along with music, dining, and makers market, Saturdays 9 to 2 in downtown Troy, troymarket.org. And Musicians of Malwick, bringing an evening of all-American wine, food, and music to the Gardner Earl Memorial Chapel in Troy, September 10th, musiciansofmalwick.org. Thanks again to Fred, Greg, and Dale Isla for being here. Thank you for listening. Thanks to our engineer, Mike Bowen. Thanks to the screener, Deluxe, Susie Chekai. I'm Ray Graff. Tomorrow it's Food Friday. We'll talk wine with Michael Babcock from WineRacks.com and the Hudson Valley Wine and Food Fest. Now, there's a great long list of things I know nothing about. Wine is close to the top, so we'll learn a lot tomorrow. We'll see you at 2:00.